What is up, everybody? Welcome to Champions Way Sports. I'm your host, Jeff Rains. And guys, we're going to be looking at today what's going on around the tribe and within Florida State Athletics. And I know some of y'all are all diehard football, but guys, Champions Way Sports, we focus on everything that's Florida State, honestly, what's within the tribe. And guys, we want to kind of show some love to the other sports. I mean, not just football. I mean, everybody loves football. I understand that. But, guys, we want to shine light on, like, track and field, golf, tennis, hockey, I mean, baseball, softball. I mean, did y'all know that Florida State had a Quidditch team? It is Florida State Quidball. And it is probably the most unique thing you can go watch. We're going to talk about all that and more on this show. And guys, at the back end of this show, if y'all hold on till then, you'll hear a sit-down interview that I conducted with former Florida State defensive back. He was actually part of Bobby Bowden's first recruiting class at Florida State, kind of one of the pillars that built the program, Mr. Bobby Butler. So guys, let's just get started. And like I said, look about what's going on around the tribe and within Seminole Athletics. And starting things off, Florida State's track and field team, guys, they were well represented in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the NCAA Indoor Championships and led, honestly, by none other than track and star phenom in my eyes, Jeremiah Davis, who earned his second All-American honor of the 2023 NCAA Indoor Track and Field Championships in the triple jump on Saturday. And then the FSU men's team finished among the nation's top 15. But like I said, Davis, he earned first-team All-American honors with a third-place finish in the long jump on Friday, was fifth in the triple jump with a leap of 16.38 meters, earning his second first-team All-American honor in that event. Ishmael Cohn, who was a junior, earned first-team All-American honors in the 60-meter sprint, where he ran down several in the final field to finish fifth with a time of 6.58. And then junior Amir Willis rounded out the Knowles trio of All-Americans, placing seventh in the 200-meter dash with a time of 20.56. Now, FSU's men tied with Oklahoma with 16 points and a finish of 14th in the nation in indoor track and field. Guys, let's turn our attention to the tennis courts real quick. And the men and women both had very tough matchups this past weekend. Now, the men, they defeated North Carolina Central but fell to NC State on Sunday. Florida State took an early 1-0 lead after winning the doubles points against North Carolina Central. The Seminoles won on both courts, number one and number two, by a margin of 6-1. And Szilagyi earned his first dual win of the season in singles play after earning the Seminoles their second point of the afternoon with a 6-0 and a 6-1 win. And that was followed up by sophomore John Bernard's 6-1, 6-2 straight set win at court number 6 and gave him his first win of the season in Florida State a 3-0 lead. However, guys, Florida State would eventually fall in the next matchup against NC State. It was kind of back and forth. NC State won the doubles points after winning 6-2 on court number 1 and 6-3 on court number 2. Szilagyi and Smith won 6-2 on court number 3 for the Seminoles, though. Straight set victories on courts 3 and 4 gave the Wolfpack match point. But the Noles will be back home. They sit 10-5 on the season and will host Louisville this Friday at 5:30 p.m. So, guys, I mean, if you want to go watch some good men's tennis, go out, watch them this Friday, like I said, at 5:30 p.m. if weather's permitting. It's supposed to be a little rainy around the area, but I believe it's free to get into. That's something. Go support the Florida State tennis program. Guys, staying on the tennis court right now, the women's team, they fell to the fifth-ranked NC State Wolfpack 6-1 on Sunday. I mean, they did do a very good job against a team in the doubles division, against a team that really should win national championships. But when it was all said and done, NC State pulled out the victory. But this weekend, the girls, will return to action Friday in Birmingham, Alabama, at University of Alabama, Birmingham. Guys, if you can't, I mean, I'm pretty sure you ain't going to be able to make it all the way to Birmingham unless you live in that area. If you live in that area, go watch them. Support them. But stats will be available at Seminoles.com. Guys, kind of segueing from the tennis courts. It's beautiful outside, right? Nice, cool breeze. Might as well get on the golf course. And the girls' golf team competed in the Valspar Augusta Invitational at Forest Hills Golf Club this past weekend. And guys, we saw Charlotte Heath post an impressive par 4 scoring average of 3.75, which is 5 under on the day. And speaking of Charlotte, she earned a second place runner-up finish at the tournament after shooting a combined 2-round score of 7 under par. She shot 137 in 2 rounds. Now, the number 12 Florida State women's golf team placed third as a team in the standing at 1 under par. Now, the Lady Seminoles will travel back to Tallahassee to compete in their own home tournament of this year, the Florida State matchup, which will be played on March 17th through the 19th, this coming up weekend, at the Seminole Legacy Golf Club. You are all welcome to attend at no cost, is what they're saying. So go out, enjoy the weekend, go watch some golf, and support your Noles. And since we're already on the golf course, might as well stay there, right? 8th-ranked Florida State men's golf team has been playing like a top-ranked team at the Seminole Intercollegiate Tournament they're holding. They're holding a 22-shot lead through nearly 2 rounds of play, and this was on yesterday on Monday at the Seminole Legacy Golf Club. Now, weather conditions forced a kind of late start yesterday for the opening round, but it didn't dampen the spirits of the hot club Seminoles. 6 Seminoles surround the top 10 of the leaderboard, including Brett Roberts, who's 1 under, in 9th place, and Cole Anderson, who's even tied with 10th. Now, all golfers have already teed off by the time we're recording this in a shotgun start today, Tuesday, at 9 a.m. The final round, though, will continue immediately after the conclusion of the second round. But, guys, I mean, to them, I mean, golf's one of them games that it takes patience and it takes time, and it's very hard to watch, really, but I enjoy it. I enjoy playing it. And, guys, if you get a chance to ever go out to Seminole Legacy, I highly recommend it. That is a beautiful golf course. I want to say it was ranked top 15 in the country in golf courses. So, guys, if you get a chance to go out, enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy just a nice, beautiful day watching the Seminoles play golf, head out to Seminole Legacy Golf Club. Now, guys, since it's a beautiful day, what better day would it be? You know, it's kind of chilly right now, but kind of head to the beach. What better thing to do at the beach? Play some beach volleyball. And the number 4 ranked Florida State Seminoles beach volleyball team had kind of a short week, really, after finishing the Tampa Invitational, traveling to Atlanta to take part in the Day of Duels. The Noles took care of business, knocking off number 20 Coastal Carolina, Mercer, and number 10 Georgia State. Now, the Seminoles started the Day of the Duels with a match against number 20 Coastal Carolina in their second meeting on the sand this season. Now, on court 5, the Noles took the first duel point of the match with Makina Wolf and Kara Sasek taking care of business, winning the first set 21-11 and the second set 21-16. On court 4, Alexis Durish and Caitlin Moon had a 3-set battle. The pair won the first set 21-15, then dropped the second one 21-19. The third set was back and forth with an incredible effort by Durish and Moon, which helped them get the Noles their second duel point of the match with a 17-15 win. The Lady Seminoles beach volleyball team, they will return to action, which will be this Friday, March 17th, on the first day of the March to May tournament in Gulf Shores, Alabama, which is really where we want to get back to in the NCAA tournament. Is where the championships is in Gulf Shore. So the Noles are really familiar on this beach because, I mean, they took on USC last year in the NCAA championships. But they will take on Tulane and the number 3 UCLA Bruins this weekend in Gulf Shores. So any Seminole fans, alumni, clubs, booster clubs that's in that area, go out to the beach, support the Lady Knolls, show them we love them. I mean, kick up a little dirt with them. You never know what you might see out there. But guys, just to kind of talk about something a little different right now, every one of these student athletes, they have bills that, you know, us that listen to podcasts, you know, have 9-to-5 jobs and all that, that we kind of take for granted. Cell phone payments, grocery bills, stuff like that, gas money, you know. And I love the NIL. I love name, image, and likeness, and I love what these NIL platforms are doing. I love how, you know, Battles End is helping with the football, how Rising Spear helps out as much as they can. Well, guys, I've been introduced to a great NIL platform, and that's Micanopy 1851. And Micanopy 1851 is a fan-driven and alumni-led name, image, and likeness program for Florida State University. When you commit to Micanopy 1851, you're committing to maximizing opportunities for student-athletes to build their brand and earn compensation. The foundation of Micanopy 1851 is steeped in reverence for the Seminole Tribe of Florida. The word Micanopy means young chief or leader in the native Seminole language. So guys, I mean, if you want to go help support a good program, a great program, and help these student athletes out, just like I believe it's the 23rd of this month, Micanopy 1851 has an event with Greedy Vance at Madison Social, I want to say. I highly recommend, it's free, go out, meet Greedy, buy some merchandise from him, help support him and his brand, but also help support these student athletes. So guys, like I said, if y'all were looking for a great NIL program to be a part of, support, there's tons of them out there. I'm not telling you which one to choose, but me, I'm helping out Micanopy 1851 just because, honestly, I've talked to the founder of that NIL program, and his heart is in the right place. We had a great conversation, and he broke it down to me, and I could tell in his voice that everything he does is pure of heart, and he is looking at the best interest of every one of these student athletes and trying to help them out. Just take care of the little things, groceries in the pantry, cell phone bills taken care of, just stuff that we take for granted. So guys, go check out Micanopy 1851 and kind of help them out. Support them, join the climb with them, and join the cause. Well guys, moving right along, I mean, we're going to talk about the softball team. They sit 21-5, and honestly, they are going to face the toughest test of the season. They are traveling to Norman, Oklahoma today in one of the most highly anticipated non-conference battles in recent memory that I can think of. They are set to face off against the number one, one of the most dominant teams in NCAA softball, Oklahoma Sooners, at Martha Haynes Field tonight on ESPN Plus. It's going to be 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central, first pitch. Now, the Knolls will be looking for its first true road win against a number one ranked team in program history. The Seminoles are 7-11 all-time against number one ranked teams. Oklahoma was the last number one ranked team that the Seminoles faced off as the two teams met in the championship series of the Women's World Series in Oklahoma City in 2021. Now, head coach Lonnie Alameda will return to Norman as a head coach for the Seminoles for the first time. People do not know this, but Coach Alameda played for the Sooners back in 1989 to 1992 and was a two-time All Big Eight. Now, this was way before they were the Big Ten, Big 12, whatever the heck they are now. They were the Big Eight. Now, she was a two-time All Big Eight selection. Alameda is 2-4 against the Sooners as the head coach of the Seminoles. But like I said, it's going to be a tough matchup because the Knolls are coming off of a series loss to number 3 Oklahoma State. They had a rally coming in, but the Cowgirls beat them I believe Sunday, 7-5. They drop back-to-back games, Saturday and Sunday. Now, Tuesday will be the sixth game that the Noles have played against a top-five team this season. And, guys, honestly, in my opinion, we're going to see really a familiar face in the pitching circle and super senior pitcher Kat Sandercock. You know, in 16 appearances, you know, she's a dominant right-hander. She's posted a 1.43 ERA, holding opponents to a 1.199 batting average and striking out 43 batters and only walking six. But when you look at Oklahoma, and this is just honest, just if you watch them pen to paper on the film, their offense is a different type of thing. That's a threat. The Sooners are batting .389 as a team. And while, you know, Florida State's good, they're going to be exceptionally well tonight. If you look at them, they got the usual suspects near the top of the charts in production. You got true freshman Jocelyn Erickson that leads the team with a .523 batting average and 26 RBIs on the year. That's a name that we're going to have to really watch out for, because Oklahoma has already shelled several ranked opponents, notably putting up 14 runs on UCLA, 10 runs on Stanford, and a combined 25 runs against Kentucky across two games. Honestly, this is going to be a fantastic battle. This is going to be one of them battles that we look back in these games, that we look back in June when we're gearing up for Oklahoma City, and think these games right here is what made Florida State what they are this season, because iron sharpens iron, really. But when it comes down to it, and you look at experience, and Oklahoma has some. You know, we do too. We got a bunch of super seniors, Kat, Mac, I mean, the list goes on and on. But some names to look for tonight and watch for the Sooners to kind of pencil beside as possible issues besides Erickson is Nicole May and Jordy Ball, combined for a five-inning shutout against South Dakota State on Monday. Two very good pitchers. Then you have Alex Starko, could potentially be in line to start tonight, is what we're reading, seeing. She's kind of a new face for the pitching staff of Oklahoma. She's a transfer from Michigan. Has a 0.24 ERA in 20 and two-thirds inning pitched. And she's already had experience against elite competition this year. She threw, I believe it was a game against UCLA. It was 14-0 blowout. But, guys, I mean, I know Coach Alameda. She's going to have the Noles ready. Really, we've got to just fix the fundamental errors. We've got to be able to hit in the tight spots. Got to make sure the pitching is on cue. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be one of them games that everybody watches, everybody tunes in. So, I mean, if you're trying to live stream tonight during this game, hate it for you. You're probably not going to get as many views as what you think you are. But first pitch between the Sooners and the Seminoles, like I said, is going to be 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. So, guys, if you ain't got nothing going on tonight, tune in to the ESPN+. Go get the app. Watch the Lady Noles take on the number one Oklahoma Sooners tonight on ESPN+. But if softball ain't your thing, but you still love being around a diamond, go tonight. I believe Florida State baseball takes on UCF tonight. That should be on the ACC network, I want to say. But Florida State baseball, they did start the ACC play with a strong start. They took two of the three against Pitt this past weekend before really a shortened game. And, I mean, the Panthers stole one. They were up by two. Rain come in, postponed the game, kind of ended the game. Honestly, I thought the Noles, if they come back out, because if you've noticed them, they've come back. They've had a hot streak in the later innings. So I thought, you know, come back out. You got eighth, ninth inning left. Could possibly sweep them. But ultimately, guys, for Florida State, the success of this team this season is going to come down to pitching. In the two games Florida State won on Friday and Saturday, the starting pitchers put in strong starts. Jackson Baumeister pitched 5 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, striking out 9, walking only 1. Knowles took that one 3-2 in 12 innings. Then you had really a face that we've been seeing coming out of the bullpen that a lot of us have thought maybe Link gives him a shot, and that was Wyatt Crowell, who made his first career start, struck out 10 hitters in his 6 scoreless innings of work. He allowed 3 hits, 4 walks, and the Noles took that one 5-3. Now, Sunday was a different story. Carson Montgomery, he struggled. He struggled to get through just 5 innings. That's kind of the script we've been having with Carson here lately. He allowed 5 earned runs on 4 hits while striking out 8 and walking only 3. Now, he only lasted 2 1/3 and allowed 8 runs, 7 earned in his last start against TCU. Our big thing is we got to find that Sunday pitcher. We've got to find that close out the series type pitcher. Carson, you know, there's flashes for sure, really. He could not, you know, consistently string together good pitches enough without, you know, pit just putting a barrel on the ball and putting it in play and taking advantage of opportunities and cashing in on them. But, guys, the Noles have to refocus because tonight they are in Orlando. And it's not easy. You know, they take on UCF Knights for a 2-game series. The Knights are 10-5 on the season, having dropped back-to-back games against Troy. They do have a 3-game road sweep against Clemson, though, to their resume, which is very impressive. So this is a game. These 2 games we really need to focus in, kind of play clean baseball, limit the errors. Just some kind of quick notes from this past weekend, kind of carrying into this week. James Tibb walked 6 times during the series this past weekend, so plate discipline's getting better. Also providing a solo home run Sunday, he has 5 on the season, halfway to last season's total for him, and we ain't even deep into this season. Jaime Ferreira was 4-for-4 with a single, 2 doubles, and a home run. His 4 hits has tied a career high. Now, when you talk about these 2 individuals, who actually, I believe, have their own live show called Daddy Jack's or something, James Tibbs and Jaime Ferreira hit back-to-back home runs in the first inning, the first back-to-back homers for Florida State this season. Like we said, Tibbs is on a tear. He's got 5. But he also leads this team this season with those 5, and he has reached safely on base 57 out of 60 career starts. Ferreira is 2nd with 4 home runs. So those 2 right there, back-to-back, that is a very dangerous combination for a pitcher to have to face. Honestly, it is. Because you can't pitch around one to get to the other, because they both want to hurt you. You can't, you know, pitch to them because, you know, they could definitely kill you. Then you have Nandar DeSantis, who hit a 2-run home run, his 3rd on the year and 16th of his career. FSU's 3 home runs in that game tied a season high. But, guys, this team right here, like I said, it's going to live and breathe and live and survive on the pitching staff. And moving Crowell out of the pen to the starting is going to give them that boost. It's going to give them that oomph they need on a Saturday. But there's still a lot of things to fix. And if you go read the article I'm about to publish at Champions Way Sports website, it's going to break down what I've seen and what kind of I think needs to be fixed around Florida State and what I think Link Jarrett is going to do. But, guys, we're going to take a quick break, hear from one of our sponsors, and then after that, I sit down with Florida State legend Bobby Butler, really the pillar, the godfather of DBU, Bobby Butler.
The show, really, I got a guest on that really was, like we spoke earlier, my eyes is the one that created DBU for Florida State. He was kind of putting fear in the quarterbacks and the coaches long before Deion. He was doing the Dirty Bird in Atlanta long before Jamal. And that's Mr. Bobby Butler. Mr. Butler, how you been?
Hey, Jeff. Well, I'm doing great, man. And I appreciate you having me on today.
Good. I mean, I've interviewed quite a few former Noles. And the first thing I've got to know, I mean, I've been a Noles fan since mid-90s, whenever I was just able to strap on that Pee-wee helmet. And how was it being recruited by Bobby Bowden? Because you was in his really his second class.
Well, I'm in the first class he recruited.
Yeah.
And he took the team over in 1976, my senior year, the fall of my senior year in high school. But, you know, Bobby Bowden was not the Bobby Bowden that you guys all know at the time, you know. He was a great coach at West Virginia. He had, you know, he had a great program there. He came to Tallahassee. He went 5-6 his first year. And he recruited me out of a 5-6 year. And I'm going to tell you, Jeff, you know, because where I come from, I'm from a little place called Delray Beach, Florida. And we got a strong history of winning football in Delray, even during segregation. And then when we integrated, you know, my 4 years of high school, we played for three state title games. When I played youth football, we won a championship every year except one, you know. And so I was used to winning. And so the program was not built where that part drew me in. But I'm just going to tell you, man, it was like instant love. So, you know, me and my parents went, we met with Coach Bowden, 8 o'clock one morning. And I couldn't, to this day, I couldn't figure it out, but I think I recognized what was going on at the time. He reminded me so much of my dad, who was a minister, who was a funny guy, right? Always kept you laughing. You know, Coach Bowden had a great sense of humor. But after the meeting with my parents and Coach Bowden, I knew immediately I wanted to play for him. And I told my mom such. And she was like, well, son, you got to go on all your trips before you can make that decision. I said, Mom, I'm telling you, I want to play for that guy. So I went to Michigan State, went up to East Lansing, and which was a great experience because it was the first time I ever saw snow in my life. And I knew right away, this ain't for me. And when I get back home, I'm shutting the recruiting down. I know what I want to do. And so that's how it went for me. And yeah, just fell in love with the guy. I mean, it was just, I didn't get a chance to go to a football game. I didn't get to hear his pregame speech. I didn't get the hype.
Yeah.
But when I met him, like I say, I just instantly fell in love with it. You know, I can't tell you anything else other than that.
Yeah. I mean, but people really, I mean, whenever I interview somebody, I go try to dig deep into, you know, the history of Florida State, when they came in. And people don't realize it, but you and another FSU great came in at the same time.
Right.
You know, played on the same side of the ball. And you know, I'm speaking of the nose guard from Warner Robins, Georgia. Absolutely. You know, Ron Simmons, you know, I just got to know, was it Ron or was it you? Was that missing piece from year one to, you know, y'all's 4 years? Because whenever y'all got there, y'all turned it around.
Well, Ron is the most important recruit, in my opinion, in FSU history. You know, I know we've had some dogs over the years, but where we were at the time with the program, to get that guy. So back then we didn't have a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star. He'd have been 10 stars, right? So to get that guy, that monster in the room, and then the other pieces we added, it was special. I mean, you can't build a team around one guy. But when you think about from a defensive standpoint, I'm not gonna even talk about offense, right? We recruit Ron, you recruit me, you recruit Keith Jones. Monk Bonasaw came all the way from Pittsburgh to walk on. You know, he had to walk on, right? And, you know, you're talking about Reggie Herring. You're talking about Paul Porowski. You're talking about Masek. I mean, Mark Masek. I mean, we're loaded on the defensive side from a recruiting class standpoint. And so we came in there. And the good thing for us was we, as freshmen, we played on a senior-laden defense. So we graduated pretty much a whole defense except for a couple guys. And so as sophomores, all of us running around for the first time together, you know, and we went 8-3 with sophomores. But the team, like I said, my freshman year, I think they set the stage for us. We were 10-2. We won the Tangerine Bowl that year. You know, we beat a Florida team, which I didn't think anybody could beat that team with the talent they had on there. Not only beat them, we busted them up. And so that made us believe, and we start working together as a young group. And then after that 8-3 year, we go 11-0, Orange Bowl. And then my senior year, you know, hands down, you know, we were the best team in the country. We never got a chance to play Georgia for the title. I'm still kind of a little ticked off about that, right? And I'm 63 years old. Can't do anything about it. But we beat Nebraska out in Lincoln. You know, they were ranked number 3, I think, at the time. I think next week, Pittsburgh went into that spot. They came to Tallahassee, and we hung them in Tallahassee, right? And we won out. We had one loss that year against Miami in the Orange Bowl by 1 point. And but we should have played for the national title. We did. But we had a great 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people, I mean, I live in Alabama, so you know what I hear every day.
I know what you hear all the time.
You know, and I pull up their record and I'm like, you know, y'all back then, you know, you had a title game, but the AP kind of chose the national champion before the game was played, really.
Exactly.
And I tell a bunch of the Alabama fans up here, I said, y'all lost one of the games. How are y'all national championships that year? How are y'all national champions that year? But you can't tell Bama fans nothing. They're going to.
You know, all right. Well, you know, they're the darlings. They're still the darlings, right? And so,
yeah.
You know, favor always go their way, and favor is not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but really, I mean, how does it feel looking back now, you know, through, you know, you look back on the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, you know, the recent success, you know, we had under Jimbo. How does it feel to kind of in your heart to know you're one of the ones that helped build that program to where where Coach Norvell's trying to get it back to, but where the glory days and what everybody knows is the dynasty under Coach Bowden. How does it feel to know that you was one of the pillars that built that program?
Well, it's special because, you know, when you're there, when you're doing the work, you don't think about that, right? You know, you have no idea, you know, what we're going to accomplish. And we had no idea when we left that the program was going to go north, right? Like that, right? And so very proud. I can remember being in the locker room playing with the Falcons and just talking smack to everybody in the locker room. And so proud of Coach Bowden and you know, and our program. And it just makes you proud. And then I got to the point in my NFL career, next thing you know, here's Jamie Duke show up at the door, right? Next thing you know, here's prime time showing up in Atlanta. And I kept telling him, I said, look, if y'all want to win, y'all need to go to Tallahassee and bring some more.
Yeah.
I used to tell him that. I said, look, man, I'm just telling y'all, right? There's something about it. Y'all need to go and get as many of us as you can, right? And so I got a picture. I love this picture, so I got to share it, right? We're talking about the dogs that I played with in Atlanta. My favorite picture, I keep it on my desk. You see it's right behind me. It's always there. This picture right here, Jeff.
Yeah.
Now, this picture, you can see the guys in this picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know who 21 is.
No, of course. Yeah, we all know who 21 is.
That's the man. That's the greatest corner to ever play the game. Yeah. And that's me, number 23. Now, this was my last year in the NFL. The first year we opened the Georgia Dome.
Yeah. Right?
So we played Green Bay. We had just traded Brett Favre to Green Bay before the season because we drafted him in Atlanta, second round,
yeah,
1991. And so, and then you see Leroy Butler just inducted in the Hall of Fame, number 36.
Yeah.
And then you see the playmaker, 27, T-Buck. Yeah. Then Jesse Solomon. Oh, homeboy Tallahassee from Madison, Florida. And then Edgar Bennett on the far end.
Yeah.
See my two boys down there, the boy in the blue, that's my oldest son. He played basketball in college and played a little bit overseas. And then that little kid is my second son, Bryce Butler, who played 6 years in the NFL. So this is my favorite Noel picture. I keep things on my desk like that. I also keep... This guy is my favorite Seminole of all time. Now, I know you might not even know who that is.
Who is that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, but I want you to look. I don't know if you can see it from where you are. I don't know if you can see the side of the helmet. You see what's on the side of the helmet?
Nah, it's a little.
It's not a spear. it's a state of Florida.
Yeah, so that was
this was 1968, 69. Yep. This guy, it was really the first time I had any interest in Florida State. He was a quarterback, and I played quarterback my whole life growing up until I came to Tallahassee. So Gary Huff, yeah. I saw Gary Huff play, and I go, man, I like that dude, right? He can throw the ball, he can run the ball. And so he's my favorite Seminole of all time, right? And then, of course, I got one of myself back there. Then my son, Bryce, who played at Southern Cal. But, yeah, I mean, our program is a big program. And it's been, for me, it's been going on since the beginning of time. Because when we think about the early 60s, we think about when Coach Bowden was an assistant coach.
Yeah.
At Florida. See, a lot of people don't get that.
A lot of people don't know that.
A lot of people don't know that, that he was here in the early 60s. Listen, he was a quarterback receiver coach. He coached Fred Biletnikoff.
Yeah.
Bruh, think about that. I mean, that's the guy who's the trophy, the best college.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so Fred Biletnikoff, he coached those guys. Steve Tenzi, who's a great quarterback for Florida State.
Yep.
I mean, so he was there at that time helping that program before he went to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Right? And then he came back as a head coach, and you know, the rest is history. Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest is history.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm on, like I said, I go back, I research, and there was something I didn't even know. And mm-hmm. by doing my show and my podcast and all the history stuff, I try to dive into it. You were actually a part, and I'm going to kind of see if this date rings a bell to you. Uh-huh. September 16th, 1978, Doak Campbell Stadium versus Oklahoma State.
Okay.
Do you know what that, you know, any significant on that one?
I remember that night. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think I blocked a field goal in that game.
Yeah. But that was also the first game that Chief Osceola and Renegade led the team out.
That was the. and listen, this is crazy, right? I just found that out that was the first one about a month ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Until recently, right? What an amazing night, right?
Yeah.
And we put it on them in there too.
Yeah. that was yeah. Y'all put them on them, and to think that, you know, and you know, I've had Tony Yeomans on. Mm-hmm. I've got some other former Noles lined up to come on, but to look back at, you've been a part of the history, you know, from the get go. You know, right. You was there when Coach Bowden came, really. Mm-hmm. Chief Osceola, you're the one, you and the pillars is what I like to call y'all, like Ron Simmons and all them. But, you know, you had a stellar FSU career, 11 interceptions. I think you still rank in the top. I think you're tied for at 11 in that list. Mm-hmm. But you also had a track and field career that was mm-hmm. phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, you walk around Doak Campbell Stadium, you see the bricks for the All-Americans. Right. A lot of people don't realize you've got two of those out there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what was it like being a dual athlete back then, you know, compared to what it is now?
Okay. Hey, so I'm laughing. If there's a reason I'm laughing like this, right? All right. I was a guinea pig. I was the first. Okay. So here's what I had to go through to be a dual sport guy at Florida State. Now, my defensive coordinator, the DB coach, was a guy by the name of Jack Stanton. And everybody think Mickey is a bad guy. This dude was for real. And he was a no-nonsense guy. So when Coach Roberts, one day in the spring, me and my roommate, Walter Carter from Richmond, Virginia, went to Tully Gym to play basketball. It was after spring football, so we were kind of free, kind of freelance. We go to Tully Gym to play some basketball. Nobody's there. So we go outside, where's everybody, right? So we look over across on the track, and there's a mob of people. So we walked over there to see what was going on. They were having intramural track. And so I told my roommate, I said, look, man, I'm finna long jump, right? And so I run down the long jump pit and jump way out there, won the thing, and Coach Roberts was just there, he was just there watching. And he just asked me, he said, look, man, I need you on the track team to long jump. And I said, I'll talk to Coach Bowden. I said, I'll be interested. And he did, and the rest is history. But yes. My DB coach, defensive coordinator, I had to do everything with the football team first before I go to the track. So let me give you an example of that. So on Saturdays, we were scrimmaging, right? In the spring with the football team. We're out there 4 hours, right? We're out there all day in the old day, right? All day.
Yeah.
I had to go scrimmage all day and then go to the track meet, long jump, 4x1, 100 meters, 200 meters.
Whew.
So I really had to go through some things, you know, and it was because I didn't go there on a dual scholarship like that. Like Ken Lanier went there, one of my classmates at Florida State. He was a shot putter. So, but at the very beginning, he was doing both, right? He didn't have any flag, but man, I had to go through some things to make it happen. But it worked out. Coach Roberts was a great track coach, and we had a great track team. You know, Mike Robinson, Walter McCoy, Ron Nelson, just to name a few. Keith and Kevin Johnson from Brandon, Florida. I mean, we just had a great, great program. I think we finished third in the nation, I think, in 79. And should have finished at least second. We had the best 4x4 in the country and the best 4x1. And we had a bad exchange in 4x1, finished third. 4x4, Ron Nelson pulled a hamstring. And, you know, it kind of threw away that opportunity to win it all. But we're a special group.
Yeah. But, you know, back to the football, you know, we spoke earlier, you know, you're in tied for 11th, I believe, in interceptions. That you also share it. We've, you know, I don't know if anybody watched College Game Day. Deion was on there, pulled up the top four, I believe it was.
Uh-huh.
You share the record book with him. You know, he was another Atlanta great.
Right.
What was your kind of first impressions of Deion when the Falcons drafted him?
Well, I kind of met him over the phone way before he got drafted. So, you know, Jamie was telling me about him and said, look, man, he's doing a great job down there. I said, well, give me his phone. Let me call him and see where his head is and all that kind of stuff. And so we had this great conversation. First time we ever talked. And I knew then, I said, this guy's special. You know, if he keeps his head all right, he's going to be a great one. And so we drafted him and we became roommates right away. And so... And so he was a special guy. The thing I love about Deion, a lot of people don't know. I mean, you may know a lot of things about him, but I don't know of anybody that worked as hard as Deion Sanders. And I say that because I know how young players are, right? I know how I was when I first came in the league. I can outrun everybody. I mean, the guys that they said was fast in the league were slow. You know, and so I found out covering these guys was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be, right?
Yeah.
And so so I had all the talent, but I didn't have, at the time, I didn't really know how to prepare for a game, to study tape. And then I was in a jazz club one night in Atlanta, owned by a guy by the name of Jim Cannonball Butler. All right, it's my cousin who played 10 years in the NFL, played running back for the Falcons. So he had a little jazz club here in Atlanta. And so I'm there one night and he introduced me to Lem Barney. All right, Lem Barney is one of the greatest cornerbacks that ever played a game. Detroit Lion, look him up, number 20. Lem Barney was talking to me, he said, man, I watch you play and man, you're pretty good. And I'm like, man, Lem Barney thinks I'm good, right? I'm like, whoa, that's a lot, right? And so he asked me this question, Jeff. He said, how much film study do you do? I said, I don't study film. When I tell you, he ripped into me like he was my brother, right?
Yeah.
Took me in the back office, sat me down and explained things to me. I took it up. I learned how to study tape. And we got a brand new coach in. And that when that coach came in, I really grew in my classroom game, right? Getting my mental together. And so when I got it down, Deion came, you know, 5-6 years later. So I'm in there doing the extra work. And guess who's sitting there with me? Prime time. And he was just eating it up, man. And so our relationship was like, it was so big because we spent a lot of time, not just on the field, but we spent a lot of time in the classroom together. And so when I left, I passed him everything that I had. You know, so we'll break down personnel, but we also break down coaching staffs. Because in the NFL, a guy get fired from one team, and you know, offensive coordinator, and he's in another team running the same stuff that he run. He's going to run his program, his package. Yeah. And so we keep up with those guys, right? And so if they show up somewhere, we go to the file. Oh, here's offensive coordinator. He's in Green Bay now. We're playing in, all right, Deion, let's go, right? And so we love that part. I mean, think how easy the game becomes to you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what they're going to do 85-90% of the time before the ball snap.
Yeah.
So an old man like me who at the end, who couldn't run anymore, didn't have to. Because I knew what was going on in the game. So it was important. And I think that's what made Deion a great coach today, because he loved studying film and tape, studying the game. And so, you know, yeah.
I mean, I think Deion, you know, is doing a phenomenal job at Jackson State. And with the news just breaking that another university that he's already been linked to before that,
right,
just got rid of their head coach. You know, like I said, I live in Alabama. If there's going to be a team up here, I root for it. It's not going to be that one. It's going to be the one that just fired their head coach and got a new AD.
Right.
So, I mean, but people don't know about Deion. You know, Deion, you know, you see the prime time.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's really kind of a – he don't like to be out in the public that much. And, you know, prime time's prime time. When the camera's on, he's prime time.
He's prime time. Right.
But, you know, there's another side to him.
Yes.
But I think wherever – if he leaves Jackson State, I think wherever he goes, he's going to be a phenomenal head coach. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you played in the league from 81 to 92.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you appeared in about – you had 101 starts. You had 27 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You played against a slew of great quarterback receiver duos. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you played against like Chris Collinsworth, you know, Montana, Clark, mm-hmm. Jerry Rice. You played against Marino in college and mm-hmm. in the pros.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, who was the best receiver you played against?
Well, when you ask me that question, Jerry Rice was the best receiver in the history of the game, right? So let's never forget that, right?
Yeah.
So at that time, during my era, we were in the same division with them. So we used to be in the NFC West, even though we were in Atlanta. So in that division, we had the 49ers, the Rams, and the Saints, okay? So I had to play against Jerry Rice twice a year, right? Now, I did pretty good against Jerry Rice, right? I matched up well against him.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who gave me trouble personally, the guy that gave me fits, was a little shorty, you know, one of the Mark brothers. Mark Clayton.
Yeah.
And I give Mark Clayton. But, you know, the other thing about Mark, I played against Mark in college. You know, he played at Louisville, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't even know who he was, right? To get to Miami, he's playing with that guy with that big arm on his shoulder, Marino.
Yep.
And so Mark was laterally quicker than me, right? So he can get off the jam, you know, and I was good at the line. I was real good at the line. You know, but Mark was difficult for me to really stub him at the line. And so there would be sometimes a little separation between us as he's coming off the line. I can recoup that. But when Marino's throwing the ball in there 100 miles an hour, pitching the ball, I'm not going to make the play other than tackle a guy. See, for me, tackling a guy was good when you can't knock the ball down, but I was always trying to deflect passes and, you know, that's – so I got to say it was Mark Clayton for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what receiver, you know, the game of football, I mean, I coached football in high school and I always
mm-hmm.
– I try to say something I heard Deion – I used it a lot this year, you know, don't let them disrespect you on the field. Let your play and the scoreboard disrespect them.
Absolutely.
You know, be quiet. Don't do nothing. And it's hard telling a bunch of 16, 17, 18-year-old boys to stop. But in the league or even in college, what receiver talked the most trash or was the best trash talker?
Well, you know, let's go back to Jerry Rice. He was not a trash talker. You could, and see, for us, I know for me, the way I play, right? I don't consider myself a trash talker, but I knew how to get up under your skin. I knew what to say to you. I may not say it a lot, you know, but I may say something to you, right?
Yeah.
I've never really, there's never really a guy like that, but I can fast forward to 1989 when Deion was a rookie. We're playing up against Indianapolis. Okay, against the Colts. And they got a hot shot receiver who was in Deion's class, right? Named Andre Rison. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed when I was studying the film that week that sometimes he would get on the line of scrimmage and get in his two-point stance. He'll look at the quarterback or he looked at the sidelines and he's screaming at the coaching staff or he's screaming at the quarterback. And so I knew he was mad because they weren't throwing the ball. So I knew, I said, oh, okay, he's emotional. So I knew going to the game, you know, when he came, I never forget, he came out and he did that in our game. And I'm lining up against him and he's screaming at them, like, give me the ball, give me the ball. And so I go to him, there's a reason why they won't throw you the ball. I said, because I ain't going to let you catch it. Right, you're not going to catch no balls today, bro. It's just how it's going to be, right? And when I said that, oh, my God, he started coming at me, right? And so that day, Andre Rison caught one pass, a three-yard slant, right? That was it, right? But he started coming at me and forgot about the game.
Yeah.
Which I did my job. He's not focused. You know, Flint, Michigan came out of him at that point. You know, he wanted to come, right? And so when he came to Atlanta, we traded for him the next year. And so when he came to Atlanta, I said, dude, I said, I was all in your head. I said, you got to let that go. You got to let that part of your game go. You got to grow up, you know, because I saw that in film. I used that against you in the game, and it worked out for my benefit.
Yeah.
And we won the game. You know, so I would say Andre was probably that guy at that moment.
Yeah. But, you know, you showed your picture earlier. You mentioned two little boys in that picture. Mm-hmm. You know, Brenton, like you said, he played basketball. He played in Berlin, Germany, and had a good career. And then, like you talked about your son Bryce, who really, I mean, had a good NFL career. He bounced around. Mm-hmm. But how proud is it to know that they were successful? You know, and me and Tony Yeomans has talked about this. You know, one of the main things as a parent now is the success of our children. Mm-hmm. You know, and those two right there, and you've got, you know, four sons, uh-huh. total, mm-hmm. Braylon and Brandel, I believe it is. You know, but to see Bryce, you know, and if memory serves me right, I think I looked it up. Bryce was recruited at Florida State?
Barely.
Yeah, I mean, but still, he got recruited.
Well,
but,
he got recruited a little bit too late. You know, it's still a sore thing with me, but, you know, it's good. Bryce was considered the fourth best receiver in the nation coming out of high school. And the end of his junior year, he got an offer from Virginia Tech. He got one from Mississippi State. You know, Mississippi State was not that good back then.
Yeah.
But the Virginia Tech offer, I go, oh, okay, Coach Beamon, that's a good offer. So then, and that was like the end of the year. So I take my tape and I send it to Tallahassee, right? I sent his tape, 5-minute tape, sent it there. And right in January, when signing day came along, Pete Carroll saw his tape at USC. And he started calling the house every day. Texting Bryce, call me. So Bryce is falling in love with this guy. And so I'm calling, hey, dude, did y'all get the tape?
Yeah.
Because y'all seen the tape, because I know what's going on, but I'm not going to tell Florida State that. Yeah, I'm not going to tell them that. Have you watched the tape? So I don't know if they ever got around to it or they took the tape and threw it in that room where they don't see it no more. But at this point, Joe Paterno is going crazy. Flew Bryce up with 12 of – so in junior day, you know, we may have 200 kids, right?
Yeah.
Penn State would have just 12, the 12 that he wanted. So we were up to Penn State, we were at the USC, Les Miles at LSU. Everybody, you know, went to Alabama, right? Urban Meyer, we went to Urban Meyer's, you know, we're in Florida. And I never forget this. So we go in the building at Florida. Bryce looked at me. He said, "Dad, are you going to be okay?" I said, "I'll be all right." I said, "I'm prayed up. I'm going to be all right." And so we saw everybody. But at the time, Florida State, you know, they were doing other things. It was the year they brought Jimbo in. So
yeah,
we had just Jeff Bouton had just stepped down. And Jimbo came in. And they probably was getting their stuff together. You know, I'm just assuming. But yeah, when we came to the junior day, not one coach talked to Bryce, right? Other than we met with Coach Bouton. But when we got in the room with all the other guys, not one coach came over there, right? So this is what I told him. I said, "Well, son, they're not recruiting you, but everybody in America is."
Yeah.
Right? I say, "So, you know, hey, yeah, I would love for you to go here. I know you want to go here. But, hey, look, you got to go where you love and where you want it." And Pete Carroll was knocking the door down every day.
Oh, yeah.
Text me, Bryce. He'll text me. Call me, Bryce. He'll text me. Call me. And here they go talk. Everywhere I go, who are you talking to? It's Coach Carroll. Coach Carroll. So he fell in love with Coach Carroll. And so he made a commitment to play at USC. And there it was. Just that simple.
Well, I mean, we're going to wrap it up after maybe one more question. Knowles this past weekend, good victory to come off the three-game skid we had. Mm-hmm. Took care of business against Georgia Tech. What's your thoughts on this year's Knowles team? Mm-hmm. And have you been around the team to kind of instill your knowledge, you know, to the defensive backs?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't jump in there because I hate to give my opinion on anything now, because remember, I played a long time ago. And see, Jeff, the thing is, the way they play in the secondary now is totally different from how I played. You know, when I'm watching TV, it's not just Florida State. It can be anybody. And I see a cornerback come up and get on the line of scrimmage. And when they snap the ball, he don't lay his hands on the receiver.
Oh, yeah. Got to jam him.
Listen, I'm messed up in the head. What are you doing up there? If you're not going to, you know, you don't disrupt that. You got to disrupt the route.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to knock him in the ground, but you need to just throw a little bit of the timing of the pattern off. If you don't touch the guy, it's 7-on-7.
Yep.
Bruh, you playing 7-on-7, and it's not in your favor in 7-on-7 because you don't have a pass rush.
Yep.
So if you up there, I want to see you lay hands on the guy.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try to teach at the high school level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like everybody's went to that college spread style. You know, they want their corners playing 5-6 yards off, and it drives me nuts. And I tell the cornerbacks, get up there. I said, these, like in high school, I said, the quarterback is on a time. He's got about 3 seconds. He's got about 3 seconds really to get that ball out. And he's getting it. He's timed up with them receivers. Mm-hmm. If you jam him just for a split second, that throws him off.
I can't tell you, Jeff, how many times I jammed the guy at the line and he leaks on me and he's 3 yards in front of me. Yeah. And the ball's never completed. Just because I did a little work at the line.
Yeah.
You know, and so it works. I mean, it don't change, right?
Yeah.
So I went to the Falcon game yesterday. It was a great game. They went in overtime with Carolina Panthers. But still, I'm watching guys in the NFL go up to the line, and they're giving up passes down the field. Dude, just touch the guy. Just don't let him go down there clean. Just have his way. You know, but – anyway, I gotta meet with a current coach to explain it to me.
Yeah,
that's all I gotta do. Tell me why y'all do it the way y'all do it.
Yeah, that it drives me crazy too, because I see it. You know, just like this past weekend, you know, the Georgia Tech opened up the second half. They went that onside kick. Really, just I didn't even expect it, but drove down the field. And it was like the boy that caught the touchdown reception wasn't even touched. You know, yeah, it was like, exactly. Yeah, but, Bobby, I mean, I appreciate everything you've done. We're going to wrap it up. I appreciate everything you've done for Florida State, everything you've done for the Falcons, everything you're going to continue to do. But before we head out, tell everybody what Bobby Butler is up to now. I mean, retired. I know you got your own show that you do.
Mm-hmm. Getting ready to do that in about 40 minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are you up to?
Well, I'm an assistant pastor at a little church right here in Peachtree Corners, Georgia. Been serving in the church for a long time. Was ordained in 1998 and became a youth pastor. I do that. That's first and foremost. But what I do in the game of football is me and a former teammate, we started a company back in 2002 called Kids and Pros. And I used to be Dominion Sports, and we started a nonprofit and called it Kids and Pros. We travel all over the country, man, doing youth football camps for kids, age 7 through 13. You know, and so that's what we do, and I'm all over the place. We do a lot of business with the Atlanta Falcon Youth Foundation, and, you know, we travel all over the country. Girls flag football is a new hot thing. They're giving college scholarships for girls now. And yeah. So we're doing a lot of that now. I mean, we were out in Montana in August, you know, coaching and teaching girls football fundamentals.
All right. Well, like I said, you know, we're going to wrap it up. I appreciate you coming on. Love to have you back on later on. Try to do a round table. But I appreciate it. And guys, we're going to wrap it up. And go Noles.
Go Noles.
30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Florida State.
Right to his head, to the 5, touchdown, Florida State. He's got P.K. Sam open. He makes the catch. Yeah. Touchdown.